Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
I'm Leo in London.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. We want people to know that autistic therapists exist and to broaden the conversation about neurodiversity. You're so welcome to join us, whoever you are and wherever in the world you are. We hope you'll find something of interest and connection here. So it's a very beautiful day outside.
It's a very beautiful day. It's for the first time. It's warm and sunny. There's no wind. I haven't seen a day like this for a very long time.
No.
I can't go out, though. I can go to the garden. I've been in the garden. It's really lovely in the garden.
Oh, yeah. But where else would you have gone?
The park is a block away. I would have walked around the park with the dogs or driven to the forest or...
On a Thursday in the middle of client.
No, not on a normal day, no. I would not have done any of those things.
No. See, this is where my autism finds it very
hard. We came across this yesterday, didn't we? This is exactly the same thing. The imagination-y part, if it doesn't make logical sense. Yeah, yeah. But you see, Go on, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's just I just can't go into it. Because it never would happen.
Because it's not real. Yeah, I know. And I'm the same with most things. It's like, I suppose it's like fiction as well. If I'm watching a movie and something is illogical and doesn't work, and it's not necessary for it to be illogical or badly researched or whatever, I will get very pernickety about it. And people around will say, well, can't you just suspend your disbelief? And I'll go, well, no, I can't, because that's not possible. And yet I could do it for something like magical, like supernatural or something. I'll allow myself to be carried along by that. But if it's something that's just factually wrong or impossible when it could have been okay, then I can't go along with it. And it feels similar to that.
It does feel similar to that because it's just factually the truth. That
so I can't fantasize.
Whether you had COVID or not, you wouldn't have gone out to the park or the forest today.
No, no. No, the very reason that I can, because I'm not working... is the reason that I can't, because I'm not well enough to go out.
And it's the reason why you're not working.
Exactly, that's it. It's totally self-defeating. So it's a good point. I cannot argue with your logic, and I am that kind of logical person, generally speaking. But I am sitting here, though, fantasizing about it would be lovely to be walking in the park or in the forest right now, because it's this beautiful day and all the flowers are in bloom in the garden and it's just a lovely spring day, the first one really.
Yes. And I guess that's okay if you just say wouldn't it be lovely, but it's because the conversation was as if you could do it.
Is that not the same thing?
No. There was something that was different about it. Like, I think yesterday I was complaining about having to drive at night and you said, oh, well, if I was with you, I would do that.
Oh, yes, that was it. Yeah.
And it was like...
Yes, but you're not, yeah, so you can't, so shut up.
It's like, well, that's never going to happen. Like, you're allowed... Like, it's just never going to happen. It's just not possible.
So don't say it. Don't think it. I know what you mean, because in that case, that's kind of... Okay, I think this is the difference. I think in that case, it was almost like an offer. You know, it was like... And it was something I can't offer, because I'm not there. Yeah. And it's also like the thing with the buckles. So do we want to talk about what the backstory is? You get these buckles on straps of backpacks so that you can adjust the length of the...
That's right. It's exactly like this.
Strap.
It's exactly like
right.
this.
Right. Yes. So
yes.
One of Lana's buckles magically came off the strap. You don't understand how, but you've got some theories.
Well, Ricky's worked it out that it must have smashed off.
It must have.
So there was no way for it to
exactly.
become unglue.
And you mentioned that to me day before yesterday, and I thought, oh, this is exactly the kind of thing that I like to go and research and find a solution for. So I
mentioned it. The reason I mentioned it to you was not to delegate it to you, though. It was
to say, what
is this thing called? They didn't even know what it was called. And then you said it's a buckle. And I would have just gone and typed buckle into the thing and find it myself. But yes, you love to have a task.
I love doing things like that.
You just got
I found some things that looked like they might be able to replace them and sent them to you. So, yeah, actually, just to finish off the backstory, because it's just relevant, there's no way to put them on the strap. They have no opening. They require you to be able to thread a strap. But if what you need to put it on in Lana's backpack's case is just an existing loop, you can't do it. You'd have to unstitch it. And I did find a YouTube video on how to do that. Unstitch it, thread it through, glue it back together and stitch it back on, or heat knife it on, whatever. Anyway, but the point was, again, I did something similar, I think. I said, oh, well, next time I'm there, I'll have a go at fixing it or something. And that's pointless as well, because she needs it right now. Again, so there is something. And I tell you what, this is my mum, actually. That's who I'm being when I do this.
Okay.
It's making the pointless, impossible offers that would make it okay, except it's impossible.
To try
and soothe something. What am I trying to... My mum is trying to soothe the anxiety of things not being okay.
But this must... Okay, so whatever you're trying to soothe must be located in you.
Mm-hmm,
because
for sure.
It's not me that needs to be soothed.
No, and you are not...
And I'm not.
You're not soothed. You're not soothed.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
The opposite of working, and...
Yeah.
As I think you wanted to make clear earlier, you are not making a request here either.
It could be somewhat disempowering for me to accept what you say. Like, we'll just wait. Of course, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to have to buy her a new rucksack before the end of the week.
Yeah.
Ricky tried to fix last night and didn't and couldn't, and then gave her one of his, and then I'll have to get her one at the weekend. But yeah, like, what is it trying to soothe in you that you feel the need to say that or imagine that kind of scenario? I could do this, and here's the...
Well, there's obviously, to talk about, you know, you could put it in the simple terms of the drama triangle, is that I want to be the rescuer, I'm pulled into rescuer, I want to make things okay.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know what I'm... I mean, I'm not, as I say, I know in my adult...
Who's the victim, though? Because I'm not the victim.
But you are, in my imagined...
You put me in that.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, okay. And
you're
I don't
in distress
like being
and
in
I
that.
Need to... Of course you don't. Absolutely. And I don't particularly want to be a rescuer either in my adult mind, but I'm just kind of recognising that there is something going on. It's probably to do with being valuable or being indispensable or making yourself indispensable. I remember there was a... He died some years ago, but there was a very famous Jewish American comedian called Jackie Mason. Mm-hmm. And I went to see him a couple of times when he came over to London. And one thing he said, which wasn't particularly funny, actually, but it was just this thing about trying to think of the context of how it came about. But essentially, the upshot was that there's something about if you're in an oppressed minority.
Yeah.
Then one of the things that you do is you try to make yourself indispensable.
Okay.
What you're doing in a foreign society or a threatening environment is you make yourself as useful as possible and therefore indispensable, and therefore they can't kill you. And I do wonder if there is some kind of hangover of that's going on for me. I need to make myself indispensable. Nothing to do with my Jewish heritage, I don't think, although, of course, there could be all kinds of inherited trauma and race memory and whatever, however you might want to think of it in those terms. But there is something about, I want to be useful. Let me be useful.
Mm-hmm.
So that you might say, oh, you never guess what happened today. Immediately I go, well, I can fix that. Let me. That's really annoying. I can see how that's really annoying. And as you say, well, you didn't say patronising, but I'm going to say patronising, disempowering, which you did say.
I wonder what it's like then for that rescuer part of you not to be invited into a drama You know, so like for me to just not consent to play that role, then what happens? Like, do you, does it just quieten down or what?
Well, I think it does. I think this is one of the things, one of the very many things I absolutely love about our communication and our relationship is that you do that. You are very explicit. You do point those things out when it happens, and you do actually say, I am not going to be playing this particular role in this particular scenario. You will name it. And
not in relation to buckles. I mean, I didn't really realize it. I just said, well, I mean, I'm going to have to buy her or get this sorted. She needs a bag tomorrow.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. That's a practical side. But what happens, to answer your question, what happens when my victim does not allow themselves to be recruited into that role is it does. Yeah. It brings me back into adult because it makes me see like we are having this in this very conversation. It's being made very explicit. And I'm going, you know, I'm realizing consciously for the first time as we talk, there is something in me that really feels frightened if it's not useful or feels threatened. If it's not useful, that my existence needs to be validated by having a utilitarian purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
To be of use.
Do you want to explain the drama triangle in case anybody's going, like, what are they talking about? I wish they wouldn't do this.
The drama triangle is always drawn horizontal line at the top, pointy end at the bottom, a triangle that way round, and it has three positions on it. And at any time, arguably, out of awareness, we occupy one of those positions and we move about as we converse with each other and as we interact. And those positions are persecutor and victim and rescuer. I think I've said them in the wrong way round, actually, going left to right. Yeah. Those are the three positions. The goal, as with most of these models, is to step out of it completely, or at least in the process be aware that you are being pulled into one of those. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of useful. Like all of those models, it's massively generic. There are always exceptions, and again and again and again, every time you've got an autistic person in these models, it's there's the it depends, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think we've actually given examples of the it depends right now as we've been talking.
Yeah. You said that you talked about, like, things that I'll be explicit about, about not being recruited into a drama, because I think that, like, the drama triangle is, like, a very famous one that's used in our field. But just in general, people try and recruit each other into dramas all the time, reenactments all the time. And actually, it's reminding me of the, you know, the TA literature on the games that people play. And it's like, I think I would be very explicit about that kind of thing with you. And I think that that's actually something around where it's really interesting when you're starting to get to know somebody as a therapist at this stage of life, that you get to see some of that stuff as it's starting, as opposed to in retrospect.
Oh, okay, yes, yes.
So, like, I remember, you know, I don't know how many years ago, but I remember being able to look back on some significant relationships of all different types and be able to see how I was recruited into a role by such and such a person completely unconsciously and out of awareness. And then it's incredibly hard to get out of that role. You know, it's that thing of, like, often relationships in all different ways are, like, akin to being recruited for a role that you never auditioned for, but it just kind of happens to you. And I think that because of the type of relationship that we have, we get to name and play with some of that stuff really early on. So, or as part of the exploration.
Yes.
And we, as we've maybe mentioned before, we began our professional relationship in a supervision group where all of that you know, was those kind of dynamics are part of the soup of the whole thing.
Part of the process of, yes. Yes.
Soup process, same thing. Yeah, I guess that I'm really fascinated by all of that because, yeah, I don't have anything more to say, but just that experience of being recruited and consenting or otherwise is much easier at the beginning, I think, before someone has a chance to, you know, slot you in out of awareness. I'm just very vigilant to that. And when I get a sense of that with you, I have permission to say, actually, whatever you're casting me in there,
yes.
I was neither auditioning nor do I accept the role.
Yes. So, and you said...
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. Okay,
yeah,
if you say so.
It's a lot of fun.
But you said in your description there of being recruited into somebody's drama, etc. And like, you know, as I always say, so much of these psychological bits of terminology are so judgy, you know, somebody's drama, etc. That can feel...
Somebody's play, somebody's life, somebody's... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one of the words that you used there, I think, is worth thinking about, which is reenactment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an extra bit of awareness, an extension to the awareness. Not only are you being recruited into a particular role with somebody in their situation, what you're saying is happening in those situations is that something is being reenacted. It's not about even a current interaction between the two of you. It's about something from their history that's very familiar, that gets played out over and over again, probably in most of their relationships.
I'm not sure that I agree in most of their relationships, because I think that this is something that often clients will recruit us to do in therapy, and they specifically recruit us to do it because we are, you know, we're a chosen person to reenact that with, whether we represent a family member to them or, you know, something significant of whatever type, or we're recruited to be the perfect such and such, or the rescuer, the savior, or, you know, we're recruited in all sorts of ways, but we're specifically recruited. It's, now, I guess you do get that sense where you can get a flavour of how that person is generally in the world by some of how they interact with us. But I do think there's also specific recruitments that are only for us because there's a specific piece of work that needs to be done.
But in life, generally, when people do that to each other, and we do it too, I don't claim to be immune from this kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the context that I think you were talking also, you know, more broadly in terms of reenactment, that this isn't, not only am I not taking this role that I haven't auditioned for, but it's also nothing to do with this interaction or this relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I hear. That's what I mean about it's something familiar that gets played out repeatedly. You're right, not in every relationship, because it doesn't apply to every relationship, but every relationship that then has a particular flavour brings up something that you feel is probably all out of awareness, all subconscious is, you know, is inevitably going to go this way because that's what happened to me that time.
Yep.
And then, of course, because that then becomes a more likely outcome, because it's getting reenacted, it only reinforces the pattern.
Yes. And is that then why it feels so hard for me to stay myself in this whole interaction around you being ill? Because...
Oh, you are beautifully circling this round, aren't you? Go on.
I will try if you don't interrupt me.
Can't help it. I'm excited.
You are... In some ways, or some of your parts are playing out with me, the stay at a distance, Shauna, you know, stay away, let me deal with this myself. And as I kind of noticed, there's other parts that are responding well to my attention or attentiveness, but also the different parts and the somewhat confusion of that does make some of my parts ask questions around, oh, are you being, like I said earlier, like, is that kind of a bit neurotic? Like, am I being over anxious? Or like questions that I might not ask if I was just getting a straightforward answer from you. But then I'm not necessarily, I'm not saying any of those things are like me being recruited into yours, because there's also obviously aspects of mine as well. There's lots of parts involved. But the basic question is just, this is case in point, that you're in a familiar enough scenario whereby you're not well, and whereby there's certain people responding in certain ways to you not being well. There's certain expectations of certain parts that want to keep things the way they always are, because we don't really want to be challenged in many ways. We just want things to be the way that they are. So that might be what's causing the challenge in all of this between us.
Yeah, there's all the social level stuff and the psychological level stuff underneath. You know, there's the social level stuff, which is outside of the role playing thing, which is where you are, you know, genuinely anxious about health related matters and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that's real. That's actually real in both our lives.
Yeah. And I've listened carefully to information you've told me about your health history. So I know you're vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's not just that I would just worry.
That's right. No, exactly what I mean.
About anyone who was unwell.
That's it. No, it is. It's real and it's specific. But then, yes, how does that play into, and that's the bit that we're curious about always, I think, just in all of our interactions in the world and in our work and everything. Mm-hmm. What is that supporting or playing into or validating that may not be helpful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, do we take choice away from ourselves when we make assumptions and think that certain outcomes are inevitable because that's how it's always been?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, none of this is simple. This is all so complicated, even when you've got two people who share a neurotype, share an awful lot in common about their neurotype as well, and are trained in particular ways of communicating, share a profession. You know, there's so much that we have available that most people do not in their communications. Yeah. And yet it remains open to misinterpretation, open to miscommunication, and open to things happening out of awareness. I'm sure way less so than for your average person, but nevertheless, it's still there.
Yeah, and the fact that we're analysing this to death means that so much of it is being brought into awareness. Because I think this is really, really important, because your experiences of how you are attended to when you're ill do go really, really deep. The experiences of being understood or not, in terms of what you're saying, as to how you feel.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that even whenever you say, there's the pleasing thing that goes in, because then, you know, I think because you are also vulnerable due to being ill, you'll go into that I'm sorry thing, and then you'll be like, I'm sorry for not giving you the information, which of course then actually makes me feel like the persecutor, to go back to that. Where, and it's kind of like and I think that's where then I'm very uncomfortable that then I'm making too big demands. So there's a lot that goes on in me, obviously, in doing this as or navigating all of this, as well as all the stuff that's going on in you.
I think I'm running out of spoons.
Hi, this is Shauna. It's Friday. Leva's voice has been absent for most of the week with COVID, though we haven't been able to record. So this recording that you've just been listening to was actually done towards the end of last week. And so, you know, it seems like okay to release, but it's a little bit short, but we're going to do it anyway. Partly because actually, whenever I listen to it again, I hear something that if you don't capture it at the time, then you lose it. And that real kind of what we call in the therapy world immediacy, where you talk about the here and now, like when you do that, this makes me feel this. And in normal life, we don't get much of a chance to do it, but it can be so useful to make explicit some of that, because otherwise all we have is the implicit resonances of our interactions. Well, there's so many more, like there's, I don't know, something like 11 million of them to every 60 explicit memories that are made. So if we can make some things explicit, we can actually do quite a lot of work. So yeah, I mean, that kind of struck me when I listened back over that. And also, you know, I feel really touched about the cultural and legacy ancestral stuff that Leo touched on, and obviously we didn't go into. In therapy, if it was a therapy session, we might have, you know, because epigenetically, it's kind of now seen that we carry the imprints back 14 generations of, you know, what's happened to our ancestors. So it's fairly possible that there is something there of a legacy that Leo's carrying, as well as, of course, just a way of being that's come out of his own experience in the world in his lifetime. So I know some people think it's a bit weird, but you know, I've got the mic and Leo's not interrupting me, so I'm just allowing myself license to whirl. I guess the other thing that I notice whenever I listen to that is the opportunity that there is where we can begin to walk out new pathways when we slow down and do things differently, when we don't just get into a familiar racket. A racket's a TA word actually, but kind of like an enactment or like a way of doing things that's just the same all the time. And like, it's just familiar pathways that we travel in our brains neurologically, but also in our relationships. And the opportunity we have to do things differently, which sort of opens up those pathways in our brain that are just still ready and able to be opened up at any stage of life, so that they can, you know, so that the route might just not be so familiar, it might be different, it might be more healing. And if it's walked more and more times, I'm not saying it can be done in one conversation, but it can change the trajectory of how things work out. So, I think that's it. I think that's Shauna's thoughts for a Friday. And I thank you for listening to us. Her Leo is on, I don't know, day 12 maybe of a positive COVID test. So he seems to be sleeping it off. His body seems to be using sleep as, you know, the best way to keep him still enough so that it can do the restorative work that it needs to do, which is probably very wise. And because he's sleeping, I suppose he's not having to feel so much of the frustration of it. Take everything I say with a pinch of salt. I'm not medically trained. I'm a therapist, not a doctor. But yeah, he's sleeping a lot and thinks that maybe the T-line is getting a bit fainter, but it is taking a hell of a long time. So you're up to date. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate those of you that take time to listen to us. We love hearing from you. Say that again. Please continue to get in touch. It's wonderful. You're wonderful. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com, or by email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. And we spell license the British way, L-I-C-E-N-C-E. We also have a thriving Facebook community. Search for Autistic License Shauna and Leo, or click on the link in the show notes.